we get the most comments about that, that how learning to read the horse has helped them in their own relationships. It's helped them in their family relationships. It's helped them in just talking to strangers in general, because they're watching.
Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Thanks for being here for this second part of my interview with Haley Matthews. In the first part of our discussion, aired in the last episode, we had discussed being at the PATH Region 11 conference together, where she provided a presentation about looking at the nonverbal signals that horses make, and I provided one looking at nonverbal signals that humans make. And so in that first part of our conversation, we discussed what each of us shared at that conference. In this second part, we start by talking more about the relationships and interactions between horses and humans. And I had started to give an example of how many people are taught to ride, including myself, and that's where we pick up here. I should ask you too, you have tremendous experience in this area, so would you like to introduce yourself a little more thoroughly and let us know your wide array of skills and experience here?
Well, my background is I grew up on a cattle ranch in Northern California, where my husband and I still live and raise cattle. So grew up pretty much riding and pretty much had the experience that you just described, where you're up there, you know, it's we all got to go. And so you got to go too, even with my own kids. I mean, they grew up around the horses, so they weren't really afraid of them. But even my daughter as a 2-year-old, you know, it's like I put her up on that great big horse, big old horse, and I would lead that horse, pony the horse. So I've been around horses my whole life. And then I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and I have a degree in agricultural science with a concentration in horses. For the past 18 years, I've been teaching therapeutic horseback riding to special needs kids and veterans, which I just have loved. It's been such a wonderful, wonderful part of my life. And it's just interesting to see the kids reacting to the horses and how the horses react to the kids as well. So there's some of that communication that happens on the ground. I like to have them with the kids on the ground for a little bit so that the horse can maybe smell them. They can have that sense of the horse smelling them and their breath blowing, the horse's breath blowing on them. I think that's a wonderful experience. So, There's just so much that we can do for people. And for some reason, these horses make such a difference for people, mm-hmm. for veterans, for special needs kids, the way they're such a big animal, but they're gentle and quiet and calming. It's a wonderful experience. I'm really happy to be able to be involved in that.
Yeah. And you are what's called a CTRI, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Do you help
certified,
us?
Certified mm-hmm. therapeutic riding instructor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. About 18 years now, which is just really exciting. Learned a lot, learned so much, especially from the kids. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Learned so much during that time.
Amazing. And CTRIs sometimes work with a mental health therapist or sometimes not both.
They
right?
can. We at the centers where I work, we don't have a mental health specialist, so we don't get to get involved in that. But yeah, that's a really cool area as well.
Mm-hmm. And so the training that you do helps the kids and the veterans, like you say, learn how to be with horses and be around them. And what are some typical session goals or like, what do you, like, because I imagine it's different between kids and veterans in terms of what you're hoping will happen in a session.
So with the veterans, we spend a lot of time working on what we've been talking about here. How to read the horse. So mm-hmm. we have a slide presentation where we're showing all these different horses in different states of their emotions or things that they're doing so that we can learn how to read them. And then we talk about this a lot as we're working with the horses. And really, when I first started working with this with the veterans, it was a safety issue because I wanted them to know, okay, when the horse has got their ears back and their tail is switching, you know, we need mm-hmm. to back up a little bit, you know, so it's like, they're trying to tell you something here. You need to be listening. Mm-hmm. And so we started teaching them what it is that they can be watching for and how they can be listening to what the horse is saying. And some of the responses that we've gotten from the veterans, we have them fill out a survey at the end of our 6-week session. And that's, we get the most comments about that, that how learning to read the horse has helped them in their own relationships. It's helped them in their family relationships. It's helped them in just talking to strangers in general, because they're watching, just like what you were saying about watching the eyes, watching, you know, the body position. And so over and over, we've heard how this has helped them with their children, relating to their children, and how they've realized that their own body position, their own tones are also making a difference in how this person is responding to them. And so if they can, you know, get a hold of their own tone or body position, that that's going to help them to relate, especially to their own children, but to their spouses and people in general. It just made the whole thing so much more exciting to me to think that this is really making a difference in people's lives, learning how to read the horse and the horse teaching them, you know, this is what I mean when I act this way. You know, it's been really a eye-opening experience for me in teaching them about this whole concept of reading the horse and understanding how they communicate.
Yeah. Eye-opening, it sounds like, in the moment, and also the reverberations throughout their life, like how many ways they're reporting that it affects their relationships.
Yeah. And just like, even, you know, even if the horse turns its head away from them, you know, so he's disengaging a little bit from you. So maybe you need to just, you know, back off a little bit, let him kind of come to you, let them decide when they come to you, and giving them that space to be able to do that.
Yeah. And for our listeners who may not know, when a horse has its ears back and is swishing its tail, what does it usually mean?
Usually means we're doing something that they don't like. Mm-hmm. So it's like when you see a horse maybe with its ears back or just even swishing its tail back and forth, it's like a tap on the shoulder. And they're mm-hmm. telling you, you know, I don't really like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then when you get ears back, tail switching more fiercely, they're tapping you. They're really going for your shoulder. They're tapping you hard on the shoulder saying, hey, you need to listen to me here. I don't like what you're doing. And then if we still don't pay attention to them, they're moving around, their tail is switching, ears are back, maybe mouth is clamped tight. If we're still not paying attention, then we're going to have trouble. The horse is going to respond in some way that's way bigger than we are. And there's going to be a safety issue there. So it's so important that we understand at least basic cues so that we can help the horse just to be calm and to relax and to be happy, which is what we're trying to do.
Yeah. And what I hear you saying is it's basic skills in relationship with the horse, like, you know, so that we can actually communicate with them and learn what they're in here and understand what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, and the horse is such a wonderful animal, because especially we may have veterans that come and they're, you know, very distressed. They've got a lot of issues in their life. And so sometimes the first couple of weeks or whatever, they just have their arms around the horse's neck with their face in the mane, you know, because the horse understands and is not questioning them. He's not pushing them. He's just letting them be and letting them express this emotion. And so we always want to encourage that, so to speak, allow that to happen, give space for that to happen so that people can really get so much of that calmness that the horse is trying to give us, and allowing that to happen. So they may just keep their hands on the horse, you know, or I've seen men crying into the horse's mane where they said, I haven't cried like that in so long, you know. Or we do this thing sometimes called heart hug, where they put their arms around the horse's neck and their heart is essentially next to the horse's heart.
Oh, yeah.
And this one time there was this older Vietnam veteran who was doing that. And then we were doing it right at the end of the session, and everybody kind of had let go, you know, stopped. And he was still in that with his arms around the horse's neck. And he said to me later, he said, you know, I haven't hugged anybody in 20 years.
Oh,
and
God.
So just to, the horse is okay, it's safe, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not going to judge you, it's not going to ask you questions, you know, it's just going to let you be. And so such a calming, beautiful thing that we can give people through these horses.
Yeah. And as I'm listening to you talk, I think that is a bit what's happening in the mental health field right now that we can sort of emphasize in this conversation, is of all the things that you're remembering about these moments and encounters, it's the fact of not doing anything that seems to be one of the most powerful moments. And I think that's counterintuitive for many of us who think we got to do something in a therapy session or an equine assisted session or service. It's like the best things happen when we're not trying.
Yeah, when we're not pushing that to happen, we're just allowing them to be. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating point that can't get emphasized enough right now, because, you know, there's so much, especially when people want to do well, you know, it seems, I'll speak for myself, I always come with way more things planned than I think I need. And then I've learned also the act of letting go of my agenda for the session, and then just to really follow and sort of stay with the moment and kind of trust the process, you know, and that it may not be something I think I'm doing or creating a moment in the session, but as you say, letting those moments arise is for me, it's something that's kind of like a co-created or shared experience with us, with horses, everybody involved, that it gets better when everybody has a chance to participate they're in their own way or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's good.
Yeah. So thinking about applications of this, I think you've mentioned quite a few. One thing that happened for us after our talk is I think I came up to you on a break and I just was thanking you for your presentation. And I think you had mentioned that, you know, you've been looking at humans more now since, or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but something also, well, yeah. What was your experience after that? I don't want to overspeak of how it went.
Well, I think I so enjoyed your talk, and my friend that was sitting next to me were like, oh my gosh, this is so wonderful, because you had these different photos of children and relating to each other in different ways, and their eye contact and that kind of thing. And with the kids that we work with, you know, autistic kids or kids with other kinds of emotional troubles, sometimes they're hard to read. And mm-hmm. and so just some of the cues and things that you were talking about helped us to see, okay, we can look for this, you know, we can look for how they're relating to us, where they're looking maybe, or, you know, some of their facial expressions or way they're relating to other people, other kids in the lesson can make this huge difference. And because they can be very difficult to read, mm-hmm. it's wonderful to be able to have some of these little tools in your bag to be able to think about how we need to move forward with this child, or how we can help them to open up or be more calm or relaxed or whatever it is that they need at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. As you were talking, I think it might also have to do with that idea of, you know, not wanting to show pain or Ooh. Discomfort or fear. I think that's another thing we share with horses. So as you were talking, I was thinking it's very similar for teenagers and any child who might feel a little different or maybe has had experienced some abuse in their growing up, to kind of mask their needs and as you say, be hard to read as a survival skill, to not show any weakness, so to speak. So yeah, kind of, and that's where I think it's what else I wanted to do in that presentation was make sure that, you know, it's okay if the child doesn't have anything to say because they're speaking in all these other ways, you know,
right.
like verbally, they might be saying, I'm fine, nothing, no. But if the rhythm of their voice, their eyes, everything you said can communicate so much more. And then when I, much like with horses, when I have paid attention to all those nonverbals, then that's the time when people seem to relax and feel safe to speak and actually say what's on their mind or their heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Giving the space for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the time too, even with a horse, you know, it may take a little bit before they can learn to trust you and to figure out that you're okay, that you're not going to do whatever it is that they're afraid of. You know, you're going to come to them in a calm, peaceful, quiet way, and they're going to appreciate that. Yeah. And give that space for that to happen.
What you're saying just there reminds me of something. I did a group actually and some work with dogs as well, like canine assisted different services. And I had a golden retriever, and I was at that point, like, goldens are so renowned for being beloved dogs that I was surprised when I went to kind of a group, and it was in a bigger city, and the children were scared of my dog. And I'm like, you know, she's a golden, like, what, you know, she's gonna, worst possible thing, she's just gonna lick you too much, like, what's, and finally one of the kids helped me understand that that's not the case with all the dogs they've met in their neighborhood. In fact, once I lived in an inner city myself, I realized that dogs have other jobs, like protecting the household and protecting the home. And so these children were letting me know, like, they didn't know that me and my dog were safe. It took time for them to understand that. And they had had enough experiences that it was a smart decision to assume first that we weren't safe and then let us, you know, spend some time together and then see if they changed their mind about that, because it was a safety skill to, you know, sort of approach us with trepidation before kind of, you know, relaxing into a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's sort of that I think there's something there too in the difference with the prey animal as opposed to the predator, you know, because like the dog is the predator, which we are as well. And so that creates this different relationship than what we would have with the horse, because the horse has to trust us kind of like the child has to trust the dog, that you're safe, that your dog is safe. The horse has to trust us because we could be the aggressors in that situation. But, you know, we choose not to be.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think a lot about that, of what's different, like what different styles of animal assisted therapies bring out of us. And you make a good point. Like in the dog human relationship, we're both predators, but in the horse one, we are the only predator. And it puts us in a different position in the relationship, like you're saying. Like it actually makes us restrain ourselves with horses, so that we had kind of to work that to let them know that we're not a threat.
Right. Even though they're so much bigger and stronger than we are.
Yeah.
You know, but that doesn't really have anything to do with it. It's an ingrained and natural response.
Yeah. Fascinating. I just wanted to thank you again for spending time with me. Anything else you think we should add to this conversation?
No, just that how much fun it is really to watch these animals and start to communicate in the way that they are communicating with us, you know, and I love the things that you're saying about helping us to be able to understand and read what the people around us are feeling and thinking and how we can respond really positively to that for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I spend a lot of time, like you said, the veterans in your program are doing, watching my own body language and trying to actively communicate that I am not a threat when I'm in a group of people. To just switch all my body, even if I'm nervous, you know, obviously much like the children I was just describing, you got to kind of watch your environments until you can trust them. But spending a lot of time turning all of my nonverbals to something that is welcoming. And
yeah. Yeah. And I think even not as much as yourself, but the kids that I'm working with, some of them have had aggressive relationships with adults. And so they know what that looks like, you know? And so they're prepared for that. And so for us to be able to step in there and not have that kind of, you know, let them know that that's not the way we're going to treat you, you know, that's, you're safe. I think safety is a beautiful, you used that word earlier. I think that's a beautiful way to describe how we want people and horses to feel around us, is safe.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's a real pleasure spending time with you. Thank you so much for taking me up on this invitation. And I hope we get to hang out more soon.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. I've loved being here with you.
I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.